And good morning, everybody. You're listening to the Mighty 690 KGGF. Kyle High with you this morning on this hump day morning. I hope everybody is doing well. And it is now time for Greenside Up. And joining me in studio today is Wendy Powell and David Scronson. Ladies, good morning. How are you doing today?
Great.
Good morning.
All right. It's good to have you guys in studio today. And we'll get started here in just a second. But David, you did say you guys have some workshops that are coming up.
Yes, we have several workshops coming up. I think Wendy's going to start us off by talking about the sheep and goat workshop we have this week, and then I'll mention a few others we have coming up.
All right, sounds good.
Yes, so our first one coming up that we wanted to mention is going to be, we're calling it Hitting the Target. So we're going to talk a little bit about vaccine handling, different vaccine programs. We've got our sheep and goat specialist coming down from Manhattan, Dr. Allison Crane, to visit with us. So that meeting is going to be a sheep and goat management meeting in person and virtual Thursday evening starting at 6 p.m. And the in-person location is going to be at the Parsons Research Center, the Southeast Research and Extension Center is the official name of that. They're right on Ness Road and Highway 400. So 6 o'clock on Thursday evening, that's the April 8th. That'll be a really great program covering lots of different management health topics in sheep and goats.
All right.
And then coming up next week on Wednesday, we'll have the From Egg to Chick workshop. This workshop will be about incubating eggs. So we'll be going over how to set up the incubator, some considerations when you're getting eggs to incubate. And then following that workshop, we'll be doing Facebook Live updates to check in and see the progress on the incubator as the chicks get close to hatching. So this workshop is at the Independence Community College Fab Food Lab, and you can attend it virtually or in person. Space is limited in person, however, so we ask that you register for the workshop if you would like to attend. Again, that's next Wednesday at 11 a.m. And then coming up the end of the month on the 29th, we're going to be having a Managing Nuisance Wildlife workshop. Drew Ricketts, the wildlife specialist, is going to be coming down to talk to us on different options when it comes to controlling or preventing damage from nuisance wildlife. I know starting about this time of year, folks start to call with questions if they have armadillos or voles causing damage in their lawns or garden, so this will be a great opportunity to find out more information about that. And then May 4th and 5th, we're going to be having a pond management workshop. On May 4th, it will be in Independence, and May 5th, it will be in Humboldt. So two different options, and that one will only be in person, but it will be outside with plenty of room for social distancing.
All right, so some great workshops coming up, and again, you can check out all those. I do believe on the K-State Extension website, I'm guessing those are listed there,
yes,
just in case you want a little more information on that, or you can call the Extension offices, and they can help you out with that. Well, David, we'll go ahead and start with you today, and today you're talking about groundhogs, and I found out less than 5 minutes ago that groundhogs are also known as by another name.
Yes, they are. So they're commonly referred to as two different names. Groundhogs, as they're commonly referred to around here. Oh. But they can also be called woodchucks. So it is actually the same animal. If you hear folks refer to them as woodchucks, it's not a different animal. It's the one you probably know as a groundhog.
Yeah, again, I found that 5 minutes ago. I had no idea, so I'm a woodchuck now as well. So, but where are groundhogs commonly found?
They are commonly found to the east of a line extending through Manhattan, southwest to Arkansas City. So populations of groundhogs do seem to be increasing and extending their range further west in Kansas. So they're kind of commonly in the eastern part of Kansas. I know folks do see them around here, but they are extending west as well.
Yeah, it seems like they, even though they're extending west, it seems like they like more, because I know I went out west this weekend and it's a little more, not desert, but it's not, it seems a lot drier out,
yes,
there.
So it's,
I think they probably like this side of the state a little bit more because it's a little more, woody and a little more hilly and a lot more grass. So
yeah, there's more cover for them, yes. More food sources for them in this part of the state.
But so what do groundhogs look like? I know I look like one because I am chunky. But anyway, but what do groundhogs look like?
Yeah, so for people that maybe haven't seen a groundhog, they have a compact, chunky body supported by relatively short but strong legs, and its tail is short and bristly. It has its forefeet have long curved claws that are adapted for digging ground burrows where it seeks refuge and hibernates during the winter. And their color is usually a grizzled brownish gray color, although fur color may vary all the way from white to black. And groundhogs have chiseled-like incisor teeth, so this is kind of going back to when they're referred to woodchucks. Mm-hmm. From the tip of their nose to the end of the tail, they are approximately 20 to 27 inches long and weigh from about 5 to 12 pounds. So they're not too big, but they are fairly good size.
Yeah, and probably not something you want to mess with those claws and those teeth.
Yeah, I can probably would defend say
themselves.
So.
They can defend themselves pretty decently. So
yeah,
they probably don't move very fast, but they got the weapons though. So what time of the day are groundhogs most active?
The early morning and evening hours are preferred for feeding for groundhogs, and this depends a little bit on dew for much of their water intake. So they want to get around in the early morning or evening when there's more dew on the ground. Groundhogs often can be observed, however, basking in the summer sun during the warmest hours of the afterday. So you may see them in the afternoon, but they'll probably be having a nice nap soaking up the sun rather than searching for food. And occasionally you'll spot them asleep on the top of fence posts, walls, large rocks, fallen logs, and grassy areas that are close to their burrow entrance. So kind of gets them up off the ground where they're a little safer, but still close to their burrow in case they need to seek shelter.
Right. So like me. So how far will groundhogs travel? It seems like they wouldn't travel very, very far.
They usually don't travel very far. Groundhogs that feed in the evening normally don't travel farther than 50 yards from their den. So they like to stay fairly close to home. However, there are exceptions, as male groundhogs have been known to travel long distances in search of a mate, and on occasion groundhogs will travel several hundred yards for forage in times of drought or to eat fallen orchard fruit. So if they're in search of food and food is limited close to their burrows, or maybe they just have a taste for some fruit, they'll go on the hunt.
There we go. So speaking of fruit, of course they like to eat that, but what else do groundhogs eat?
They also eat large quantities of succulent plants. Woodchucks or groundhogs can become a nuisance, however, when their feeding conflicts with people's gardening efforts or when they dig burrows in hay fields. So, of course, folks don't appreciate them digging and eating in their gardens. And, of course, them digging in hay fields can be very problematic when it comes to haying. They may feed in gardens, flower beds, alfalfa, and clover fields, and occasionally groundhogs will damage young trees in orchards or nurseries. Although groundhogs will climb trees on occasion, they prefer to eat fruit on the ground and normally do not cause damage by climbing trees to eat fruit.
Well, of course, they can be a nuisance at times. So what are the options when it comes to controlling problem groundhogs?
Yes, in rural areas, groundhogs may be legally hunted in Kansas year-round and may be taken by properly licensed hunters. Landowners and hunters should agree on arrangements that are mutually satisfactory and will avoid unsafe shooting practices. No lethal control options, including trapping, and non-lethal control options include trapping and installing fencing around gardens to prevent groundhogs from getting in. The most permanent control method is fencing. The practicality of fencing depends on the size of the area that you want to exclude them from. Because groundhogs are excellent diggers, it is necessary to sink the fencing 2 to 3 feet into the ground to prevent them from digging under it. And then, of course, if you're fencing around a garden, you, of course, need to access it yourself. So the entrance gate should be sturdy and elevated. And some gardeners prefer to build 2 separate sets of steps over the top of the fence. So a person leaving the garden moves the steps on the outside of the fence and then kind of can step over it. And then you don't really have to deal with a gate and blocking that as well.
But basically kind of like a small staircase up in and out, because the groundhogs probably are not going to waste their time trying to crawl over it.
Yeah, they're more prone to just try and dig under.
Yeah, we'll just go under it. Yeah, hope we don't get seen.
Yeah.
So what are, if you're looking to, you know, use non-lethal ways to get groundhogs, what are some of the best traps to use?
Yes, groundhogs may be trapped in Kansas by using cage traps made of wire mesh. And this is the style that's recommended to use. Oftentimes you can find these in Orchlands or other farm stores, and they're the live animal traps. Where food is abundant, groundhogs may not enter the cage traps for bait. And traps may be placed at burrow entrances or at the site of damage, and can be baited with apples or other fresh fruit. Using fruit is the most likely option to attract groundhogs, especially when there's plenty of food around. And these metal cage traps are most efficient because groundhogs may chew their way out of wooden cages because, of course, those front teeth they have. And then after the groundhogs are trapped, they can be transported at least 10 miles away and released into suitable habitat. So you want to transport them at least that 10 miles away so it's not convenient for them to come back to your garden. However, it is recommended to keep in mind the time of year that you're trapping groundhogs, because you really don't want to trap them and move them to a new environment in the fall, because that's when they're looking for a place to hibernate for the winter. And when they're moved in to a new area that they're not familiar with, they might not be able to find a suitable spot and build their burrow and den to hibernate in before winter comes.
Yeah, because that takes a while to kind of burrow down there and get everything ready. So
yeah, and become familiar with the food sources in the area.
Exactly. So, and like you were talking about those front teeth, I don't know if you ever seen the movie Groundhog Day. There's the part where, you know, the groundhog's right in front of Bill Murray when he's driving the truck. Well, apparently that was a real groundhog, and apparently he got bit by the groundhog several times. So,
but I imagine that would really hurt.
So, because he said it was his fault he startled the groundhog. So
yeah.
So of course he reacted as such. But anyway, lots of great stuff to know about groundhogs, including that they're also called woodchucks. And David, if anybody wants any more information on groundhogs or wants to talk to you about it, how can they get a hold of you?
They can reach me by calling the Independence office. That number is 620-331-2690.
All right. And before we go to break, we're going to preview our next segment. We have Wendy Powell with us this morning. And good morning, Wendy. And what will you be talking about today?
Good morning, Kyle. I'm going to discuss a little bit about vaccine handling. We are in the midst of cattle work season, and also lots of different species are needing, including humans these days, are needing vaccines. So we're going to talk about how to keep those vaccines safe and useful to make for sure that the money, because some of them are very expensive, the money that we spend on those is actually going to be effective on our herds.
Absolutely. So we'll talk about that on the other side of the break, starting again at about 8:10. Wendy Powell will be talking about vaccines. So we're going to go ahead and take a break. And when we come back, we will have some news at the top of the hour. And then again, Green Side Up restarting at 8:10. And welcome back to Green Side Up right here on the Mighty 690 KGGF. Hope everybody's having a fantastic day out there. And rejoining us in studio are David Scrantz and Wendy Powell. And ladies, before we get restarted with our show, again, you guys do have a couple of workshops coming up. And Wendy, I'll go ahead and let you take the lead on the first couple of workshops coming up.
Sure. Thanks, Kyle. we've got a sheep and goat management program. We're calling that Hitting the Target. That's going to happen Thursday evening at 6 p.m. We've got that located in person at the Southeast Research and Extension Center in Parsons. 6 o'clock on the 8th at Parsons. And then also you can join us virtually for that. So we've got our specialists coming down from campus to visit with us. And we're going to talk about vaccine handling and vaccine protocols, vaccination programs, rather. And lots of different disease management strategies. So that's Thursday.
Yeah, and then coming up next Wednesday, the 14th, we're having a workshop from egg to chick. So this workshop will be covering how to incubate eggs and setting up the incubator. This workshop will be at the Independence Community College Fab Food Lab, and it is available to attend in person or virtually. Space is limited in person, so we ask folks to register for the workshop. And then coming up the end of the month, we have a Managing Nuisance Wildlife workshop, and Drew Ricketts, the Extension Wildlife Specialist, will be coming down to talk about different management and control options to keep wildlife out of your gardens and lawns. And then coming up the beginning of May, on the 4th and 5th, we'll have two pond management workshops. The one in Independence will be on May 4th. It will be that evening. And then the following day, we'll have another workshop in Humboldt. So there's two different options for that workshop. And that workshop will be in person only, but it will be outside. So there'll be plenty of room for folks to social distance.
All right, so some great workshops coming up, so be sure to get out there and check it out. All right, well, Wendy, let's get over to you here today. And, of course, today you're talking about vaccine handling. Mm-hmm. And no, we're not talking about COVID-19. So,
nope, we're not.
So that's one good. We get enough of that every day. So, but I talk about vaccine handling. So at what points are vaccines at risk or of going bad? And what kind of vaccines are we talking about?
Sure. Well, we just so happen to be talking about all gamuts of vaccine. So the COVID vaccine would fall into one category or another here. But manufacturers, they create modified live vaccines for livestock industries, killed vaccines. All of these vaccines are used to prevent detrimental health problems within our herds. So there's lots of different pinch points where a vaccine would go from the manufacturer to the animal when they're at risk of going bad. So anytime they get warmed up or too cold, and also sunlight is a problem, which we'll get into that in a little bit. So pretty much going from the place of purchase, whether that's shipping or the local farm store, transportation to the farm, and then storage on the farm. We're going to talk a little bit more in detail about this, but some places are more risky than others. And then, of course, whenever we're taking the vaccine from our on-farm storage to our chute side to vaccinate the animals. So lots of different areas and time frames that we can improve some practices on if it can be a problem for you.
Yeah, absolutely. Because vaccines can be extremely fragile. They got to be handled correctly. And, you know, like you said, various ways they got to be handled. Can't be too hot, can't be too cold. Before leaving to pick up some vaccines, obviously we'll talk about that in a second, but what can make a vaccine go bad? There's lots of different ways that can happen. And also, before leaving to pick up your vaccine, what should you prepare?
Yeah, so like I mentioned, vaccines that get too cold or too hot, freezing, and then room temperatures are detrimental for various reasons. So for modified live vaccines, those warmer temperatures just simply inactivate the active ingredient. And for the killed vaccines, the freezing temperatures will actually do some chemical changes within there, and they can actually release some toxins. So if a killed vaccine has been frozen, then it might actually be a bit more fatal than what you wanted.
Oh, that's so not good.
No. So, of course, time vaccines expire, so they have to be used in a timely manner, and that's just a matter of checking expiration dates. So, and then sunlight. Sunlight can be detrimental in a lot of different ways, and vaccines are also susceptible. So you got to make for sure that they stay in the shade and not get lit up. Before you leave the farm to get your vaccine, you might want to throw in a cooler and some ice packs, and go ahead and I'll say, quote unquote, charge that cooler. So go ahead and put the ice packs in the cooler. And so when you get your vaccine from the farm store and put it into the cooler, you're putting it into a cold cooler and not a cooler that's been sitting in the back of the feed truck in the sunlight. So it's hot on the inside. And then it takes a while to get that temperature back down to the solid storage temperature. So you want to make for sure you do your research on where you're purchasing your vaccine from. A reputable dealer, they'll keep a temperature log of their vaccine coolers. This will be someone that you're familiar with. Just make for sure that where you're purchasing from doesn't go through a lot of electricity problems. They know what the protocols are for vaccine storage in the store. So just do your research there. And then also before you leave the farm, you want to check and see how much you actually need. One of the easiest ways to prevent a vaccine going bad is just to simply purchase the amount of vaccine that you actually need for however much work that you're going to be doing in the next few days. And if it's convenient to get to town to purchase the vaccine more often, then that's usually a better way to go than trying to store it yourself on the farm.
Yeah, this is one of those things that's better to get the exact amount you need rather than, oh, I'll just get a little extra. This is one of the times you want to get exactly the amount you need.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So if you were going to have your vaccine shipped to you, though, what are the tips on that?
Sure. So just make sure that you're having it shipped overnight. So with shipping these days, all of the fact sheets say that don't have it shipped on a weekend, but our shipping protocols these days have definitely changed. So just make for sure that you're having that shipped overnight and that you're going to be available when that delivery is made so that you can get that vaccine into a refrigerator or to a cooler. You can check those ice packs. And then if those vaccines arrive and the ice pack is no longer cold, then you'll want to go ahead and get a hold of the shipping company or wherever you purchased the vaccine from and get that replaced. It's just not worth taking any risks.
Right.
Like that.
And like you said, you want to be present at delivery as well. So you want to be there right when it gets there. That way you can store, which brings us to the next question on the farm. Where should the vaccine be stored?
Yeah, that's a great question. So a lot of times we're just going to put that vaccine into the refrigerator out in the barn or in the shop. And David, I don't know about your farm, but this was always the refrigerator that was going bad in the house. And so we bought a new one for the house and we just took the bad one or the old one out to the shop. And so it's really not all that reliable.
That's what we did too. Yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty common.
Still running.
Yes.
So, I mean, a good extra fridge.
Exactly. So that's really common. And actually there was a big research project in Arkansas that showed that we are not the only ones that do that. So it's very common for that refrigerator that's going bad to be used for vaccine storage. And we spend a lot of money on vaccine. So if that's what you're going to do, which is fine, you just need to make for sure that you've got a simple thermometer inside that refrigerator and you're recording the temperature regularly to make for sure that the temperature stays between 35 and 45 degrees Fahrenheit. So if you've got that refrigerator outside in winter time, then it might be susceptible to cold spells, or during the summertime, the refrigerator might be running constantly. And so the inside of it gets colder and then it, you know, warms up a little bit and then it kicks on again and then it gets cold. So you just have to know your refrigerator, and if you're going to spend money on vaccine, you might as well store it appropriately.
Absolutely. Like you said, don't use the old one that only works half the time. So if you could share some tips for day of use. Obviously, that's another thing as well. You want to make sure you have a kind of an ideal day when you're wanting to give these vaccinations.
Yes. So there's lots of different ways that you can manage your vaccine at the shoot side. So there's what we call vaccine coolers. And these are just the small lunchbox size, six-pack size, if you will, coolers. But they have like PVC pipe channels, I'll call them, so that you can actually stick your syringe gun down inside there. And you've got your ice packs on the inside. And of course, Kyle, you understand this a little bit more because I'm using my hands. But anybody that wants to visit about a vaccine cooler, I'd be happy to visit with you about that. You can find them commercially. They're kind of expensive, but they're also really easy to make. So it's just a matter of getting a vaccine and holes and the right equipment. Or I'm sorry, the cooler and the holes and the right equipment. And then you just are able to put those syringes down into those channels and keep them cold. And then that eliminates the sunlight problem as well. And so then you would even have a separate cooler with an ice pack in it for the bottles that you have not used yet. So two different coolers, one for the vaccines that are in use and one for the vaccines that you're about to use, so that you're not opening and closing coolers. You're eliminating that problem as much as possible. Whenever you're working animals in cold weather, of course you want to make for sure that those coolers can also be warmers. So lots of different methods there, heat pads, a lot of that will take electricity, depending on what your situation and your facilities call for. So you just want to make for sure that those vaccines don't get too hot or too cold.
And other things to check out for on vaccines, one of the things you want, definitely expiration days. This is like medicine with us. When it gets to past an expired day, we probably need to toss them out. Same thing with vaccines, right?
That's exactly right. So the manufacturers have figured out with their vaccines when they are most effective. So they've already done all of the research for us, and at those expiration dates, then the manufacturer has determined that the vaccine is no longer going to be active. So if you're trying to vaccinate for blackleg with a vaccine that's after the expiration date, you don't know what really you're injecting into that animal, because it's old vaccine. And if you're going to spend the money on vaccine, you might as well let it be effective.
Absolutely. Also, talking about mixing modified live vaccines. I don't know if that's the greatest idea in the world to be doing that, because obviously you don't know what the kind of reaction is going to be.
Yeah, with the modified live vaccines, they'll usually come in the same box. So you've got your sterile water or sterile liquid, and then usually what we call a cake in the other bottle. And that cake is actually very stable at pre-mixing. But then whenever you go to mix those two, you'll take the sterile water and put that into the cake bottle. And the cake containers are usually glass. They're vacuum packed so that whenever you insert the liquid into that, it's going to reach its equilibrium like you need it to. But I just wanted to make for sure people are using transfer needles for those. That's a special little needle that's got points on both ends and usually like this metal flat, kind of like a strap between them. And they're usually a couple inches long, and you use that transfer needle to go between bottles. And that's really going to make for sure that your vaccine stays safe. You don't use those needles to go into an animal. And so those needles should be clean as well.
Absolutely. And leading into that, talking about needle care, you want to make sure those needles are all good.
Yes, absolutely. So there's different types of strategies when it comes to needle care. Some vaccines, you need to change the needle out every animal. Some vaccines, you can go about 10 head before switching them. But you always want to be looking at the needle. If there's burrs on the end, then it's going to take more pressure to get that needle through the skin. And so that can cause a larger injury, leading to injection site lesions, things like that. And then also, it's going to be harder for the vaccine to come out of the needle if there's a burr on the end of it. So make for sure that you're looking for burrs, bends, or broken needles. And just monitor that with each animal. And then if you're doing implants, then those need to be changed out every animal. That's the implants are when we go in the back of the ear with those implants. Change those out every animal and just make for sure that you are reading what size of needle you need for each vaccine, because different vaccines have different viscosities, different thicknesses. And so, of course, you don't want to use a really small needle for a high viscosity vaccine, then it's going to take forever, like syrup going through a really small tube. You want to make for sure that you're using appropriate size needles for your vaccines.
Absolutely. So lots of great stuff about vaccines and talking about vaccinations. And Wendy, if anybody does have any questions for you, how can they get a hold of you?
Yeah, my number at the Altamont Extension office is 620-784-5337. And you can get a hold of me at any of the extension offices, really, but Altamont's my home office.
All right. So lots of great stuff that you guys have been talking about today. Of course, we heard about groundhogs, who are now known as woodchucks, apparently. I did not know that until today. So, and also some great stuff about vaccinations. Ladies, thank you so much for coming in today. We really do appreciate it. And we'll talk to you guys again here in a couple of weeks.
Thanks for having us.
All right. Thank you for coming in. And we're going to go ahead and take a break. And when we come back, we will have the Midweek Medicare coming up. You're listening to the Mighty 690 KGGF.